Hi, do you have a couple of moments for a short survey? Thank you. So, question number one, do you like Christmas? Yes, oh, that's good. Question number two, do you like podcasts? Oh, yes, that's good. Question number three, do you like imbeciles? Imbeciles. Idiots. Do you like idiots? Yes, good. Oh, that's good, good. Do you like smelly men who are ugly and sit around in their pants shouting at microphones? Oh, yes, you do. That's good, that's good. Oh, you're going to love this then. Run the theme music!
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, it's just seeing a trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the sharp range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. Merry Christmas. You're looking fabulous. I've got to say, you are looking fabulous. I'm glad you've made an effort. At least one of us has. Do you want to do the interactive bit? Here it comes. How have you been? Oh, that's good. And scene. That's something, I suppose. Right, so I don't think I've got any housekeeping this week. I don't think I probably have. I say I don't think I have because I don't think I have, but I probably do have. Does that make sense? I don't know. So should we just get straight into it? Yes, we shall. We'll start with this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is the Chipmunks' Christmas Carol. Now, when this was first shown on TV, this episode was actually called Merry Christmas, Mr. Carol. But then they released it on VHS and they called it A Chipmunks' Christmas Carol. So, there you go. So, I'm sure you know a bit about the Chipmunks, but I'll just refresh your memory. They originally started back in 1958. And to begin with, they were just a recording group. Their first single was called Witch Doctor, and then they had their most popular one, The Chipmunk Song, or Christmas Don't Be Late. Both of those songs got to number one in the US, and they were created by a man called Ross Bagdasarian, I hope I said that right, and he had the stage name David Seville. Now, the Chipmunks themselves, Alvin, Simon and Theodore, were named after three of the Liberty Records executives. Yeah. Now, they originally released these singles, then they had a cartoon which ran for one season in the early 60s, and then they came back again in the 80s and they had another cartoon that ran for, I think, nine seasons from 1983. And now this episode comes from Series 7, it's Episode 13, and it was first shown on NBC on the 16th of December 1989. Like I said earlier, I'm sure you're familiar with the Chipmunks, but if you're not, there's three chipmunks that are recording stars, and I think they're meant to be aged 8 or 9 or 10, about that age, and they live with a chap called Dave Seville, and he's their songwriter. Now, I didn't have a massive history with the Chipmunks, but I do want to share something with you. So, when they used to show this cartoon on children's BBC, it'd be like just after school time, so you'd get home, watch your cartoons, and then the boring grown-up stuff would come on. And they'd have a presenter between, like, cartoons or kids' shows, whatever they were showing. And at this time, his name was Andy Peters. And what he used to do, he had the words, and he'd sing along to the theme tune at the start of the song. This one, have a listen. So he'd be there, it was called the Broom Cupboard, where he'd sit and introduce the shows. And he'd be there in the broom cupboard, singing along to the lyrics. And this was every episode he'd do this. But then some kid wrote a letter in, whinging, about him singing along to the theme tune. And they were saying something along the lines of, when I get home after a hard day at school, when I get home after a hard day at school, I just want to be able to sit and relax. And he didn't want to have to listen to Andy Peters singing. So they had a vote. And all the kids voted whether they wanted him to sing along or not sing along. And you know what's annoying? I can't remember what the outcome was. I can't remember if he did carry on singing. Yeah, I liked it, personally. Get involved in it. Join in. Anyway, Now, it opens up with them coming out of school, and this is the day before Christmas Eve. It's the last day of school. But Alvin is annoyed that their teacher has actually given them longer to do an assignment, which he hasn't even done yet. In fact, he says this.
She gave us the assignment 3 weeks ago, Alvin. 3 weeks isn't enough time to write an entire page.
Yeah, he's had 3 weeks to do a one-page assignment, the lazy git. So they're getting on their bikes, and Alvin's going, I haven't got time to do that. I've got to write my Christmas list and send it to Grandma and Granddad. Now, they get on these bikes, and they're very dangerous. Now, they're about the same height, maybe a little bit shorter, than your average child of the same age as them. But they've got very short legs. So when they sit on their bikes, the pedals are right up by the saddle, and yet the bike is like normal size. So I just think they're very dangerous. They can't touch the ground, is what I'm saying. You know, if they come to a stop, they're going to fall over, they're going to topple. Anyway, that's not important. Well, it is important. Cycle safety is always important. And also, why not just get shorter bikes? It'd be fine. You'll be fine, kids. They're cycling home, and then we cut to a chap called Mr. Carroll. Now, I don't know if he's ever been in any of the other episodes of The Chipmunks. I did watch the cartoon a bit when I was a kid, and I don't remember seeing this character before. Anyway, he's out on his front lawn. He's planting flowers, but he's not planting them in a flower bed. He's actually planting them in the grass. It's like he's sort of almost digging a flower bed, but not digging a flower bed. And he's there with his cat, and it turns out his cat's called Ebenezer. And he's planting these flowers, and he wants to give them names, because he thinks naming the flowers will make him feel less lonely. I don't know, if I was going around naming stuff in my house, I think that'd make me feel more lonely, because he wouldn't talk back to you. Why are you ignoring me? Why won't you talk back to me, flowers? I planted you, I gave you life. Anyway, Alvin comes tearing around the corner and rides over the grass and the mud splatters all over Mr. Carroll, and then he rides off. Also, at this point, now, the chipmunks, I believe, live sort of near Hollywood or in LA, so a very temperate climate. Because it is December, don't forget, it's the day before Christmas. But all the trees have still got all their leaves on them, and I saw a couple of trees that look suspiciously like oak trees. Now, I've never been to California, but I'm guessing some of the trees would lose their leaves. None of them had. A lot of them are palm trees, that's fine. None of the others are lot. Anyway, who cares? Now we cut to Simon, and he's down in the cellar at home making this automatic sock sorting machine for Dave, which is kind of like a wooden wheel with socks on. I don't know how it would work. I don't know how it sorts the socks. I'm sure Simon's far more intelligent than me and he's worked it out. But the wheel's sort of spinning around and the socks are attached to the ends of the wooden spokes. I don't know. But then Dave tries to come in. So Simon runs up the stairs. He's like, no, Dave, don't come in. Don't come in. He pushes Dave out the door, closes the door, but then the sock machine just all falls apart. So that's a problem. Then we cut to Theodore, and he's making Christmas cookies, and Dave comes in, and again, Theodore's like, get out, I'm making cookies, you don't have to look at them. And then we cut to Alvin. Now, Alvin is writing his Christmas list. You or I might write our Christmas list on a sheet of paper, or sheets of paper. He's using a scroll. Yeah, he's gone old school, proper old school. A huge long scroll. Well, I say that, he's got a scroll of his list, but then he's also got a separate sheet he's still writing even more. Now, this scroll, a bit of a trope that in cartoons, and also on TV, any TV shows. It's cheap comedy to have a huge long Christmas list, but that's fine. Dave is shouting up the stairs, going, have you done your paper round or something like that? And Alvin knocks the scroll off the desk, and the scroll rolls down the stairs, and it's so big, it actually knocks Dave over. And he's laying there on the floor. And Dave's like, look, go and do your paper round. Now, here's the thing. Alvin does not want to do his paper round, right? It's just before Christmas. That's the one time you want to be doing your paper round. I had a paper round for like four years it was. And I, let me tell you, kids, I hated that paper round. Hated it. Apart from at Christmas. Because at Christmas, you get your tips. And then I loved it. I mean, I didn't get tips off everyone, but I got tips off lots of people. And that was nice. So he should be loving doing his paper round this close to Christmas. Anyway, Alvin rushes off to do his paper round as quick as he can. And he's saying, I've got to get home by 5 o'clock to finish my Christmas list for my grandparents so I can get it in the post so they'll get it tomorrow so they've got time to buy the presents on Christmas Eve to bring them round on Christmas Day. So he's tearing through the streets, throwing papers in all directions. Bit of a montage here where he's throwing papers and they're going in all the wrong places. Finally, he's got his last one. He throws it, and it's for Mr. Carroll, who we met earlier, and it lands in Mr. Carroll's bird bath. And Mr. Carroll's not happy about this. He's like, oi, get back here. Alvin's like, I haven't got time. So Mr. Carroll, he's raking in his garden, throws his rake. I don't know what he called his rake. I'm guessing he gave it a name because he didn't want to feel so lonely. throws his rake like a javelin through the spokes of Alvin's wheel on his bike. Now, normally, in a cartoon like this, you'd think he'd go flying off, but he doesn't, he just comes to a stop. Which I thought was quite handy, actually. You know, I don't want to kill a small chipmunk on Christmas Eve, day before Christmas Eve, sorry. And Mr. Carroll's like, right, I want my paper. And Alvin's going, look, it's there, it's in the bird bath. And he hops off his bike and gets it out, and he wrings it out like you're wringing out a towel, which I thought was quite funny. And he goes to hand it to him, and Mr. Carroll's like, no, I want a fresh one. And Alvin's like, I haven't got any more. And Mr. Carroll's like, well, you better get one, or I'm going to tell Dave. So Alvin rides off trying to find another paper, and the music, I think, is overly dramatic. Listen to this. This is what it sounds like while he's riding around, just trying to find another paper for Mr. Carroll. And he's going to all the paper stands and that, and the shops, he can't get one. And then luckily, some bloke has thrown one he's finished reading in the bin, so he grabs that, delivers it to Mr. Carroll, rides back home, gets home. It's gone 5 o'clock. He's missed the post. He cannot post his list of presents to his grandparents. And I like this because he's sulking and he says this.
Grandpa and Grandma Seville, two of my major suppliers. Suppliers? Of Christmas presents.
So Theo comes up to Alvin and tries to cheer him up, going, here, have a gingerbread man. And what I found interesting about this is the gingerbread men were iced on both sides. That's rare. You don't often get that. But Alvin is still sulking, and he's like, no, I'm going to go to my room and cry in the dark, which is a good solution, I think. But then he remembers he's got to do his school assignment. So he's upstairs doing his school assignment, and he falls asleep while he's writing it. And then he wakes up at the stroke of midnight as someone comes in his room. Now, we didn't have a Jacob Marley character, so he's not been forewarned that he's going to be visited by three spirits. In comes the ghost of Christmas past, and this is a bit of a trope that you often get, especially in sitcoms when they do a version of A Christmas Carol. The ghost is actually someone he knows. And without listing them, I can think of at least three, just off the top of my head right now, versions of A Christmas Carol on sitcoms where they've used actual characters from the show. Anyway, the ghost of Christmas past is Dave, right? But he looks a lot older and he's a lot more haggard. And I'm thinking, wouldn't that be the ghost of Christmas future? Because he's got like white hair and his face has got loads of lines on it. It's like, what? Why does he look older than in the past? Oh, you've ruined it. And his outfit's a bit interesting as well. He's like wearing robes with a cape. Robes and a cape. Robes and a cape. Wow. He comes floating in and he says, look, I'm going to take you to see your past. So they go back to this like snowy cottage where they used to live when they were young. And the three chipmunks, they don't look much different. They look a bit shorter. Their faces look about the same. And they've got their presents for Dave. And these are the presents they've got.
An eraser, and a pencil, and a piece of paper. These are great. Thanks, fellas.
Did you catch that? A rubber, a pencil, and some paper. And Dave's like, oh, I'll use this right now. And he sits down at his piano, and he puts the paper on it, and he starts writing out notes, and he starts composing a tune. The tune he composes is this one.
Christmas, Christmas time is near. Time for joy and time for cheer. We've been good, but we can't last. Hurry Christmas, hurry fast.
And then we get a lovely montage of them enjoying Christmas together, dancing around a Christmas tree, decorating, doing stuff like that. And then Dave, Ghost of Christmas Past Dave, says this.
That was the night I wrote the Christmas song.
And I thought, no, it's not, Dave. You didn't write the Christmas song. You wrote the Chipmunk song, Christmas Don't Be Late. Don't start trying to claim the glory for the Christmas song, the old chestnuts roasting on an open fire, buddy. Goodness. So then the ghost's like, right, let's get you back home. And Alvin wants to stay, but the ghost's like, no, you can't. So he goes back home, and then we get the Ghost of Christmas Present. And the Ghost of Christmas Present is Theodore, and he's dressed like Santa Claus, and he's got this big sack as well. And Alvin says, oh, have you got a load of presents? And Theodore's like, no, I don't deliver presents. And I'm thinking, then why are you dressed like Santa Claus? And why have you got a big old sack? Well, I'll tell you what he's got in the sack. He's got the present in the sack. Because you look in the sack, and you can see the present. So this is meant to be like the next day, Christmas Day the next day, and Alvin comes running into the living room, and the first thing Dave says is, have you delivered your papers yet? And Alvin's like, no, I'll do it later. I've got to look at my presents. And he starts going through his presents. This one's for me. This one's for me. For 4 hours. And he hasn't opened any of them. He's just going, this one's for me. This one's for me. How many presents could you sort in 4 hours? It's a lot of presents, kids. Anyway, Alvin, who's looking in the sack, thinks this is great because he's got all his presents. He's very happy. But then we cut to Mr. Carroll. And Mr. Carroll is there with his cat, and he's got a hat, a Santa hat, for his cat, Ebenezer, puts that on his head. And he's also got a present, which is a stuffed mouse or something. Now, I'm watching this, and I thought, he gave that cat a hat for Christmas. And I remember, when I was a kid, I made a hat for my cat one Christmas, and I gave it to him as a Christmas present. I made it out of felt, it was like a cone, and I put some elastic so it could go under his chin. Now, let me tell you something, kids. Giving a cat a hat as a Christmas present is like giving someone a kick in the arse for a Christmas present. I can tell you, my cat hated that hat. Cats generally aren't fans of wearing clothes. They're not big fans on it. They don't even like having a collar, most of them. It's not a great present, is what I'm saying. Don't give your cat a hat. Unless it's the Cat in the Hat. But then if it's the Cat in the Hat, he's already got a hat, hasn't he? That's why he's called the Cat in the Hat. There's a clue in his name. Right, where was I? Oh, yeah. So then he starts going on about how much he loves his newspaper. Because he's so lonely, this is his way of contacting with the outside world. So he opens the door, and of course, Alvin hasn't delivered the papers because we heard Dave tell him to go and do it earlier when he's sorting for his presents. And it's just an empty doorstep. And he's kind of resigned to the fact because it is Christmas Day. And me having my paper around, I never delivered papers on Christmas Day. I can't remember if I delivered on Christmas Eve either. Can't remember. Anyway, that's the end of that scene. Then we get the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. And he actually calls himself the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Now, at this point, boys and girls, I have to tell you, my mate Mickey Mike Westfall from the Advent Calendar House podcast actually covered this Christmas carol 2 years ago. And I'll tell you, it goes into a lot more depth than I do. So after you've listened to this, why not go and listen to that episode? I'll put a link in the show notes for his episode. Now, in that episode of Mike's podcast, I actually get a shout out because they make a point of mentioning how much I appreciate it when they call the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. And I was really surprised in this episode that they did call him that. I was assuming it's a bit lightweight. I thought they'd just say Ghost of Christmas Future. But no, he says Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. So well done for that. That's the pretty much one redeeming feature of this whole episode. So then he's got this big appearing TV screen and he starts showing Alvin the future. And we see them, and I guess this must be the next year because they all look identical. Although, right, having said that, they haven't aged in like nearly 30 years. The first cartoon, I think, was in the early 60s though. So they haven't aged since the early 60s. So I don't know how far in advance this is. I'm guessing it's the next year. So Alvin comes in and he's carrying massive stacks of presents, right? And he walks into the kitchen and Theo's there doing the cooking. And Alvin's like, oh, don't worry, these presents are all for me. And then Theo's like, oh, well, I made dinner. And Alvin goes in and says, well, this is fantastic. I won't lie to you, kids. I didn't think it did look fantastic. There's a pie that looks quite nice. And then there's 2 big loaves of bread and a couple of bowls that look like they might have mashed potato or maybe some sort of cauliflower cheese or mac and cheese, I don't know. And there's a bowl of sprouts. But that's pretty much it. And Alvin goes round and eats the whole lot. Every last mouthful. Yeah, and there was no turkey or any meat of any kind in the middle of the table. So Theodore, I thought you were a decent cook, but now I'm not convinced. Anyway, he's eating all this and then they say this at the end.
Well, it's not like I ate everything. I left a whole bowl of Brussels sprouts. Big deal, Alvin. You hate Brussels sprouts.
And Alvin, having eaten all this food, suddenly is like a massive... He's like a beach ball. You know Violet Beauregard in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory when she chews that gum and she turns into a blueberry and she just inflates and she's massive? He's kind of like that. He's like this huge beach ball of a chipmunk. And then the doorbell goes and the grandparents turn up and Dave answers the door and Alvin comes running down and leaps at them to get his presents, and there's a bit of a crash, and then we cut to later on in the day and the granddad is on crutches and the grandma has got her arm in a sling and Simon's got his head bandaged and they're all looking a bit worse for wear. And Alvin's like, oh, when did the doctor say you'll get out of that sling? And they're like, oh, we should be fully healed again in about 4 months. And he's like, great. Well, come May, I'll send you my Christmas list. And he starts jumping up and down, getting excited, saying, these presents are all for me, 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 me. And he's jumping up and down. And he's so big at this point, although he hasn't got any taller, he's just got rounder. He's jumping up and down, and the whole house collapses. Yeah, the whole house collapses because a large chipmunk is jumping up and down in it. And Alvin's like, oh, I could do without that being the future, or something along those lines. And he wakes up and he's like, right, I'm going to sort my act out. And he finishes his essay, and then it's the next morning and it snowed. There's snow everywhere. Loads of it. So much snow, in fact. Simon, Theodore and David have built a great big snowman. Yeah. But here's the thing, boys and girls. When Theodore showed Alvin the present when they were looking in his sack, Mr. Carroll went outside to get his newspaper on Christmas Day. There's no snow there then. What's going on? What is going on? I'm beginning to think this isn't even a real documentary. I'm beginning to think this might just be some shoddily made cartoon. Anyway, Alvin rushes off to turn in his essay at school and buys presents for everyone. And then it cuts to him making cookies, and he takes them out of the oven, and Theo tries one straight away. Let them cool down a bit. Let them cool down a bit, Theo. You're going to hurt your tongue like that. That's not how you behave. And then he helps Simon make his sock sorting machine. Do you remember we talked about earlier? And they give that to Dave. And then he goes round and delivers the paper to Mr. Carroll. And he brings Mr. Carroll round for a sing-song. And they stand around the piano and all have a sing-song. And then the next day, the grandparents come round for Christmas Day. And they all have dinner together, including Mr. Carroll. And that is how it ends. Thank goodness. All in all, I didn't like it much. I didn't hate it, did I? No. I'm searching my heart. There's no hate for it in there. Not much love for it, though, really. It's just something. You might enjoy it. The problem is, if you want to show it to kids, they'd have no frame of reference because they'd be familiar with the latest Chipmunks cartoon, which is CGI, or the films. So if you're showing them this, it's like, well, what's this? Why are you showing me this? If the cartoon was still the same, or they were familiar with the cartoon, maybe they'd want to watch that at Christmas. But as it stands, I think it was just pretty much of its time, really. I don't think I'll be going back to it. But if you do want to check it out, there's a couple of versions on YouTube. I will put a link in the show notes so you can watch it. But that was this episode's version of A Christmas Carol. Now we're going to do this. Boys and girls, I have tapped into a whole new vein of Christmas jokes. I'd forgotten about this. My daughter got given a Christmas joke book at Christmas by one of the many Santa Clauses we went to visit, or Father Christmases. And I'd forgotten all about it because she'd had it in her room. And she hadn't been reading it, so she had it the other day, showed it to me. I was like, oh, I forgot about that. And it's called Jingle Bell Jokes for Funny Kids. And it is apparently ho-ho-hilarious. I'll be the judge of that. Here comes our first joke. What did the snowman say to the carrot? Get out of my face. It's not that bad, is it? Not that bad. Not that good either.
Where are you, Christmas? How about the North Pole? Or, more specifically, North Pole, Alaska. This is one town in the U.S. where it is accepted to keep your Christmas decorations up all year. In fact, it's encouraged. Nestled just outside of Fairbanks, North Pole only has about 2,700 residents, and it is located about 1,700 miles south of the actual North Pole. It is only a 15-minute drive south of Fairbanks along the Richardson Highway. You'll find that North Pole features holiday decorations and trimmings even if it's 80 degrees in July. Although small, it is a unique and charming community that embraces its famous name. In fact, the North Pole motto is, "Where the spirit of Christmas lives year-round." It has street names like Santa Claus Street, Mistletoe Lane, and Kris Kringle Drive, and they are all lit by candy cane striped streetlights. You may even see the Northern Lights, which are nature's own festive display. North Pole's biggest attraction is a gift shop named Santa Claus House. This was an original trading post that was established in the town's early days. It is now a gift shop and a tourist attraction that sells holiday ornaments, toys, and souvenirs. The Santa Claus House also has the world's largest fiberglass 42-foot tall statue of Santa Claus. And located next to the shop is the Antler Academy, where you can find Santa's reindeer team, a small group of domesticated reindeer. Even the Food Network's Guy Fieri has traveled the North Pole to sample his favorite holiday dishes for the hit series Diners, Drive-In, and Dives. Now, if you know of another festive place with a distinctive name, you gift it to Jack, he'll present it to me, and we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the year.
That pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? Their motto, where the Christmas spirit lives all year round. Another great one there. Fantastic work, Bob. Bob will be back again a bit later on, but right now, boys and girls, we're going to be doing this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Here it is, boys and girls, the quiz, the quiz. You know you love the quiz. So, I've got 12 people that sent me their scores with 3.5. Now, often, I won't give half points. It's all or nothing, baby. But with this one, I thought, you know what? I'm going to accept a half. The question in question was question 4, which was, which two artists were part of the Christmas number one? I'm not going to go into it. Anyway, it was Elton John and Ed Sheeran, and a couple of people only got Elton John. I've let them have the half point. You know why? Because it's Christmas. That is my gift to them. Half a point. And I'm expecting thank you letters. So with 3.5 points, you had Jack Unverthurf. With 4 points was my dear friend Shelley Arnold. With 5 points was Guy Sawyer and Pamela Wootton. With 6 points was Gerard Case Blanchard, Frank Tolley, and I think it's Tally, isn't it? Tally. Frank Tally and John Gomez. With 6.5 points was Lauren Morley. 7 points, Benji Pearson. Equaling my 8 points was Nicola McLean and Martin Goodman. Good to see you're back on form there, Martin. And with 9 points, lording it up over all of us, was my mate from the Advent Calendar House podcast, who I mentioned earlier, Mickey Mike Westphal. Congratulations, Mike. Well done with 9 points. Incredible work. Well, boys and girls, now it's this week. We've got a mix here. Some of the questions are about Christmas carols. Some of them are about Christmas movies. Here we go. Question number 1. What carol is sung outside Scrooge's office in A Christmas Carol? What carol is that? And this is the one in the book, not the one in certain films. It's not often that the carol singers singing out Scrooge's office in films are singing the same song as in the book. Okay, question number 2. Which carol was previously known as Carol of the Drum? Number 3. In which century? Okay, so you've got quite a broad spread there of 100 years. Okay. Which century was the song Do You Hear What I Hear written in? Okay? Which century? Question number something. You've got to tell me what year, okay? I'm going to give you 3 to choose from. In what year was carol singing banned in England? Was it 1647, 1747, or 1847? Which year? Next one. True or false? Silent Night was originally written in German. Is that true or is that false? Next one, fill in the blank. You've got to complete the song title. It came upon a blank clear. What was clear? Tell me now. Okay. We've got another fill in the blank one for you. You've got to complete the movie title. Okay. It's Jingle Jangle, A Blank Journey. What kind of journey was it? You tell me. Okay, next one. In which county do the Claus family end up in Arthur Christmas? I'm going to give you 2 options. Okay, they're both in the south of England, but one is in the east, one is in the west. And that is it Cornwall or is it Essex? Which county do they end up in? Okay, question number something. Which actor plays the narrator and conductor in the Polar Express? Got it? Cool, Shref. Easy one. Next one. Which Christmas animated film features the song Walking in the Air? Okay. Well, those are your 10 questions. I'm sure you all got 10 out of 10. But just to confirm, let's give you the answers. So, what Christmas carol is being sung outside Scrooge's office in A Christmas Carol? Well, that was... God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Saviour was born on Christmas Day to save... That's what you're getting. Okay, a question number two. Which carol was previously known as Carol of the Drum? That was, of course, The Little Drummer Boy. That's an easy one, wasn't it? Now, which century was the song Do You Hear What I Hear? What was that written in? Which century? You ready? It was the 20th century. Yeah, 1962. Yeah, which is funny because you wouldn't think that, would you? It sounds like a proper carol, but no, it's written in the 60s. Okay, next one. In what year was carol singing banned in England? 1647, 1747, 1847. Well, it actually says in my book, right, the answer, yeah, it says 1649. Not even 1647. I knew it was the 1600s, but 1647—this is the quality of this quiz book that I possess. But if you said 1647, you can have the answer because that's closest. 1649. Goodness. Yeah, that was when the Master of Fun, Oliver Cromwell, took over for a little while and said, "Right, no more singing Christmas songs because I'm a miserable git." Next one. True or false? Silent Night was originally written in German. Of course it was. Yes, Stille Nacht. And fill in the blank one. Complete the song title. It came upon a midnight clear. Yeah, midnight was the missing word there. Did you get that? Well, well done. Or not well done. I didn't hear what you said. Okay, next one. That was another fill in the blank, wasn't it? Right. Complete the movie title, Jingle Jangle, A Something Journey. Well, it's Christmas Journey, isn't it? You needed something Christmassy in there. I suppose you got Jingle, sounds a bit Christmassy. But yeah, it was A Christmas Journey. I haven't seen that film. I am familiar with it. I think I've seen it on Netflix or wherever it is. But I haven't watched it. I should do, really. Okay, in what county do the Claus family end up in Arthur Christmas? Is it Cornwall or is it Essex? Now, I'm going to do my Cornish accent. This is what you talk like. All right, Arthur, what are you doing in Cornwall? Okay, is that what they talk like? Or do they talk like this? This is my Essex accent. All right, Arthur, what are you doing here in Essex, mate? What are you doing here? There you go. And the answer is, of course, Cornwall. Yeah, they're a lovely little Cornish village dropping off a tricycle, I believe. Okay, next one. Which actor plays the narrator and conductor and a load of other characters, actually, in the Polar Express? That is, of course, Tom Hanks. And the final question, which Christmas animated film features the song We're Walking in the Air? That is The Snowman. Now, boys and girls, I don't wish to brag. However, I scored 10. Don't want to make a big thing about it, but I did. But right now, I'm not interested in what I scored. I'm interested in what you scored. So, send me your score in an email. Last week, 12 people did it. You could be one of those 12 or more. So, send me a score and I'll read out your name and your score in the next episode. And don't be ashamed if you got a naff score, because Jack Umberforth only got 3.5. He sent it in. Well done, Jack. Be like Jack. Okay, boys and girls, now it's time for this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
We used to have happy hours at the Tiki Bar, but then I thought, why limit happy to just an hour? Apocalypse Now is a 1979 epic American war film based on the 1899 novella Heart of Darkness. However, the setting in this film is changed from the 19th century Congo to the late 1960s Vietnam, so the criticism turns from British colonialism to American imperialism. This film is most remembered now for its production problems. I mean, how the expensive sets were destroyed by severe weather. Martin Brando showed up overweight and completely unprepared. And Martin Sheen, he had a nervous breakdown and suffered a near-fatal heart attack. These delays and increased costs, they nearly destroyed the career of its director, Francis Ford Coppola. And despite all this, the film did still affirm the key elements of the story, only the dehumanization of the Africans in the novella became the exploitation of the Vietnamese in the film. The reputations of both of our countries end up being savaged by the words of the famous British novelist Joseph Conrad. Now, what does someone regarded as one of the greatest writers in the English language have to do with Christmas? Especially one whose novels and stories depicted crises of the human psyche, war, anti-heroes, and themes of darkness and madness in an immoral world. You would not expect a light and cheery Christmas tale from Conrad, and you don't get it. Conrad was a British officer who spent two decades on various ships. One of the things he wrote was a short memoir called Christmas Day at Sea in 1923. It drew upon his experiences of spending 16 Christmases aboard ships or in ports. Conrad writes that on a ship, Christmas is not a date to make a fuss over. A melancholy dominates Conrad's story as he describes the sense of isolation of those at sea. Specifically, there's a yearning for the person-to-person contact that we make during the holidays by giving gifts, gathering with friends and family, and sharing a festive meal. Now, what most stands out to me is Conrad's stark description of Christmases at sea, which he characterizes as fair to middling. This sets my internal "do you hear what I hear" foghorn bellowing. I've heard this term middling spoken in English TV shows and films, but it is rarely heard from Americans. Fair to middling is a phrase that suggests a spectrum. Middling is an old Scots word that gained popular usage in Northern England. It has been in use since the 15th century, where it was first published in 1450 in a Scottish manuscript on weights and measures. The inch should be with the thumb of a middling man, neither over great nor over little, but between the two. The phrase originates from the world of agriculture as a grade for livestock and crops. When it appeared in a 1707 farming handbook entitled The Whole Art of Husbandry, it was noted that as you gather your fruit, separate the fairest and biggest from the middling. The implication is that what is fair is bigger or superior to what is considered middling. Thus, it is between two things, only the medium, neither good nor bad. Middling got its start as a Scots adjective for something of intermediate quality. It then entered into commercial usage as a grade for a product. At some point in the early 19th century, the phrase came into commercial speech or to designate an economic class. And now, in everyday use, it is generally a means to understate or to downplay. So when greeted with, "How are you?" an American might reply, "Great, fine, or I'm good." Someone from Lancashire, they reply, "Fair to middling." And if we're circling back to Joseph Conrad, middling can be a simple metaphor. It is not the extremes, but the middle ground between right and wrong, civilization and barbarism, or that limp strand of tinsel and the blinking lights on your ugly Christmas sweater. Cheers and happy Christmas!
Well, look at that, boys and girls. Not only do we get an analysis of Apocalypse Now and Heart of Darkness, we also find out where the term fair to middling comes from. Not one I use often, actually, fair to middling. You hear it. You do hear it, but it's not one I actually use. But great work again, Bob. Now, boys and girls, if you're not listening to Bob's podcast, why not? I tell you this every episode for the past 2 years, because their 2-year anniversary is just coming up, and they have a special episode where they look back over the previous year's films and discuss which ones were their favourites. So, listen to that one, and it'll give you a couple of ideas for foreign Christmas films you might want to check out. Yeah, and then listen to all the other episodes. Great work, Bob. Now it's time for this.
I'm singing, I'm in a store, and I'm singing. I'm in a store, and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
So, boys and girls, this episode, I have not one, but two Christmas not-so-classics. Now, the song itself is a classic. In fact, it is apparently the most covered song of all time. It's Silent Night. And the two versions I'm going to talk about are from two very popular artists, but you might not have heard these versions before. Now, the first one I'm going to discuss comes from December 1988, and this is by the band Bros. Now, if you're in the UK, you've definitely heard of Bros. In Europe, they were really popular as well. I think in Australia, they got pretty big. Never seemed to make it across the Atlantic, though. Don't think they were popular in the States at all. Now, they released their first single in 1988, and they became massive. They were huge. They were one of those bands that just girls go crazy for, and they had a real look about them, because it was two brothers that were twins, Matt and Luke Goss, and their mate, Craig Logan, and they wore, like, ripped jeans, and they had Grolsch caps. I don't know if you know Grolsch. It's a type of beer, but it's got a very distinctive bottle cap to it, and they had those caps on their shoes. I don't know why, but then loads of people started wearing Grolsch caps on their shoes to emulate Bros, would you believe? Yeah, they're fans of the Brossettes. There was a lot of girls in my class that were huge Bros fans. Now, their two biggest hits were these two. And they had only one number one, that last one, but they had a total of 8 top 10 hits. Craig left the band after a couple of years because he was really exhausted and he just became totally disillusioned with the whole fame thing. But he did stay in the music industry and became a really successful producer and songwriter. Then the brothers decided to go their separate ways in 1992. That was the end of it. But by that point, their popularity had really waned. But in December of 1988, when they were at the peak of their success, they released a Christmas song, and this was a double A side. So one side was, of course, Silent Night. The other side was this song called Cat Amongst the Pigeons. Have a listen. There's a cat amongst the pigeons. So this is their version of Silent Night. Let me play a bit for you. Silent night, holy as night, darkness flies, all's light, shepherds hear the angels sing. Yeah, so they've changed the lyrics, actually, from what you might be used to. I'm going to read out the lyrics to you. This is what they sing. Silent night, holiest night. Darkness flies, all is light. Shepherds hear the angels sing. Hallelujah to the newborn king. Jesus the Saviour is here. Jesus the Saviour is here. And then it says, silent night, holiest night. Guiding star, lend thy light. See the eastern magi bring. Gifts and homage to the newborn king. Jesus the Saviour is here. Jesus the Saviour is here. And he really goes for it when he's singing it. Have a listen to this bit at the end. Jesus, the Savior, is Yeah, he's given it his all there. He really is. Now, the song itself got to number 2. Yeah, so it never quite made it to number 1. But still, number 2 at Christmas, pretty impressive. But you never hear it anymore. at all, actually. I think the last time I saw it was on some Christmas song compilation I was watching, but that was a good 4 or 5 years ago now, I'd imagine. But what's really interesting about this that I wanted to talk about is the videos. So the first video for Cat Amongst the Pigeons is one of the brothers lives with his parents, and the dad's, I don't know if he's meant to be an alcoholic or what it is, but he's there shouting at the mum, and the dad's getting really angry, and they're arguing at the dinner table, and he stands up like he's going to strike the mum, and the son stands up and like grabs his hand, and they're like really face to face, like they're going to have a massive confrontation. And then he runs away, like packs a bag and he disappears. So then the mum is on the phone to his twin brother, and him and Craig, the other guy from the band, they jump in their car and they're driving around the streets looking for their brother. I'm not naming their names because I can't tell the difference between Matt and Luke Goss, I'm sorry to say. So yeah, one of them, Matt or Luke, has done a runner. And then at the very end, it ends with Matt or Luke, the one who's run away, walking into a church, and it's like a bright light as he walks in and the video ends. And then Silent Night is just him there singing in front of the altar in the church. And then right at the very end, his brother and Craig, they come in and they're sort of stood there with him. I can't remember if they're singing with him, doing the backing or what happens. And then the very last bit, the camera moves up and the mum and dad are there in the church as well at the end. So it's kind of like a nice ending to it. And I only realised that when I first researched this song. And I don't remember that at all from when the videos came out all those years ago. But I do remember when the song was in the charts. I would have been about 14, I suppose. Yeah, I remember it, but I don't remember the videos at all. So it's funny to see it now. And it actually was two videos making a story. Anyway, that was the first one. It's an interesting version. I'll give them that. But this is the second one. And this is quite a delightful song. Now, this one is by Sinead O'Connor. Now, Sinead O'Connor is incredibly famous for this one song, and it's this one. Nothing compares. Nothing compares to you. Now, she released her first single in 1987, but in 1990, she released that single, and it was at number one in 18 countries. Now, that was her biggest hit by far, because in the UK, that was her only top 10 hit. I think she had a couple of top 10 hits in other countries, and maybe in Ireland. But she was still recording in 22. Now, sadly, she passed away in 2023. But like I say, she was still recording up until the year before she died. Now, this song, she released in 1991, and it is incredibly haunting. Have a listen to this. So, now, she sings just the first verse, the second verse, and then the first verse again. And I've no idea where I heard this, but I've heard it recently. And I remember listening to it thinking, wow, this is quite haunting. Now, it was on Fred Claus, apparently. They used it on the soundtrack for that. But I've no idea where I heard it recently. I think it was last Christmas. I was watching something and it came on. I was really quite impressed with it. When it was released, it didn't do particularly well. It got to number 60 in the UK. At number 12 in Ireland and number 71 in the Netherlands. But other than that, I don't think it charted anywhere. But yeah, I think it's a glorious version. The video's an interesting one because it's sort of set in modern day, but she's dressed in Victorian clothes and she's being chased by another guy who's dressed in Victorian clothes. And she's kind of possibly like a ghost. I'm not really sure. Now, if you haven't heard it before, check out the whole song and have a look at the video because it is quite delightful, in my humble opinion. Have a listen to a bit more. So there we go. Those are my two versions of Silent Night that you may not have heard before by two very popular artists. And now it's time for this. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation is a podcast called A Short History Of. Now, I've been listening to this on the BBC Sounds app, and I'm not sure if you can get BBC Sounds overseas, but you should be able to get the podcast on iTunes or whatever. It's also part of the Noiser group, but if you can get the BBC Sounds app, that's fantastic, because then you don't have to listen to adverts all the way through it. You might get an advert for another BBC podcast at the start, but that's it, and then you get to listen to the whole thing through without adverts. And it's really cool. It's like a potted history of all sorts of things. It could be an event, it could be a person, it could be a period of time, it could be an invention. And they're so very, very interesting, and you learn so much. Now, I've listened to a few this week, but my particular favourite was A Short History of Prohibition. So in an hour, they give you a history of the 13 years of Prohibition in the US. But there's loads of other stuff on there. Like I say, famous people. I listened to one about P.T. Barnum. I listened to one about the Titanic. I listened to another one about the Watergate scandal. There's loads of stuff on there. And there's hundreds of episodes to choose from. So you can just scroll through, see what you might be interested in, and download those. Definitely worth a listen, boys and girls. That's this episode's recommendation, A Short History Of ... Check it out. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a huge thank you again to my mate Bob Baker for sending through his fantastic segments. Also, thanks to everyone who sent in their scores for the quiz. Make sure you do it again this week. It means a lot to me. So the email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com, or you can go on the website totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry Happy Christmas.
Good morning. Merry Christmas. I hope I'm in time to see you flip the flapjack.